This program was originally broadcast in 1997.
Hi, I'm Marian McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Keith Ingham. He's a British-born pianist and arranger who has 2 Grammy nominations to his credit and a host of recordings besides. He's a man to be reckoned with, believe me. Keith, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Marian. Lovely to see you again.
Yeah, it's nice to see you. It's been ages.
Right.
It's so nice to have a fellow Brit.
Fellow Brit, as they call us here.
And I'm really wondering how you got into jazz, because you went to Oxford and you were a classical Chinese student. Tell me about that.
Well, that came a little later, but how I got interested in jazz?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's in England, growing up, you know, after the war years there, in the sort of early 50s, I got interested in it, and through friends at school. And the only way we could really hear any American jazz over there was through records. And LPs had just started to come in, but they were way out of my budget, you know, as a kid. But I could still afford a 78 occasionally. And so friends at school were playing these 78s we get together. And so they were all into the Charlie Parker things and the Miles Davis things like that. And that's what I started out listening to, not realizing that there was so much wonderful music that had gone way ahead of that, you know.
Well, where are you from? What town?
From London.
I mean, I'm trying to think. Like, you must have had some pretty hip schoolmates for them to be listening to jazz as well.
Yeah, but that's true enough. But jazz at that time was like the music that your parents hated. So naturally, you were very keen to pursue, you know, every angle of it. And it was a kind of, you know, growing up, your teenage protest music of the time. I mean, that made my father angry, you know, so...
So you really like that?
Well, not really liking it, but, you know, it's a challenge, right? You're starting to challenge parental authority around about
it's
that.
It's funny. I don't know if I ever went through that. I was sort of meek. But yet, when I think about it now, I was always doing things they didn't like. I mean, they weren't really vociferous about not liking jazz, but they weren't particularly interested in it. It was sort of like something I did, but they wondered why. But then, of course, right. when I left and did all the bad things, you know, went out in vaudeville, married an American musician, all that. Then I
right.
really...
You'd hit rock bottom by then.
I certainly did. Yeah. But before we go any further, it'd be fun to hear you play something. One of the things you probably learned at school. A Foggy Day by George Gershwin.
Yeah, I think that's about the best song written about London.
It certainly is.
Well, it beats maybe it's just because I'm a Londoner. I think it's a little better than that. Okay.
Boy, that's terrific. Now, did you take lessons, or were you an instant ear player, or how did you get started?
Well, there was a piano in my parents' house, Marion, which was...
thank God for that.
Yeah, absolutely. When it was full of glass, one of those V2 rockets had landed and demolished a house just down the block, and it took off the roof of the church that was nearby, and that's really what saved us. But all the glass got blown in, and it went right into this piano. We could never get it out again. I mean, it was just incredible. But I had something to play, and...
Well, could it play in spite of there being glass?
Yeah, it was a little tinkly, but it played. But I started to have some piano lessons from... a lady who was probably about 2 shillings cheaper than anybody else in the neighborhood, which was the governing factor of why I went to her.
2 shillings? I haven't heard that for a long time. That's
right.
What? That's probably the equivalent of a quarter or something.
Something like that. But she was 1 and 6 pence instead of 1/2 crown, so per hour. And she taught me how to play scales, arpeggios and things like that, and sit there with a knitting needle pointing at the music and beating time. And whacking me on the knuckles.
With a knitting needle.
Oh, yeah, the knitting needle was there. A white one, I remember it. But the lessons lasted for about 8 months, and I'd reached the stage I could play a Beethoven bagatelle. Entered a contest, a South London piano contest, and won it, you know, so, hey, this kid's okay. Maybe. Who knows? Then one day, I went for my usual lesson, and there is this Miss Pierce, her name was, she's sitting there with a knitting needle, and she said, you know, they finally landed, looked at me straight in the eye. I said, I looked at her in puzzlement, you know, he's an eight-year-old kid. Finally landed. I said, what do you mean, Miss Pierce? She says, the Martians, you know, they're here. You know, they're landed, they're amongst us now. And I thought, strange. I went home and told my mum. Miss Pierce said, the Martians have landed. End of lessons. So
that's really funny. I guess that was the first sign that she was...
Well, she believed in UFOs, you know, so...
But now, I'm so fascinated. When did you get into your going to Oxford and taking Chinese?
Well, I continued to play piano, but my, you know, my parents didn't really care much for jazz, so I had to play when they were out of the house as best I could. But I went to Oxford with a scholarship from my school. I was going to do French and Russian, but which is part of the family background. But when I got to Oxford, everybody was doing French. I mean, it was just like a factory, and you had to pass what they call the prelim examinations, your first couple of terms. If you got through that, then you could stay. So you had to do the exams in the subjects that you went up with. So I stuck with the French and that, and finally decided, you know, to get away from this factory thing. There were only 12 people in the whole university doing Chinese. I thought, we'll give that a go, just see what it was like, and. It was my chance to get on a one-to-one basis with your tutor. It's a kind of a different system up there, but you really get to know somebody very well. Well, as luck would have it, the tutor also adored jazz, particularly the older kind of jazz, which is my favorite. He loved Bessie Smith, Louis Armstrong, Jimmy Noon, and we'd spend the time doing a bit of Chinese, and then he'd get out his records, and it would be wonderful.
Oh, how great.
Yeah, that was delightful. So it continued up at Oxford, my hearing jazz and loving it, you know. So,
but then you evidently got so good at Chinese that you were able to go to Hong Kong.
Well, I was out in Hong Kong working for the British government, and I had to sign the Official Secrets Act. It was a kind of a strange position I found myself in. Because,
Official Secrets Act?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Once you sign that, you can't say too much about what you were doing. Otherwise, you end up in, I don't know, some jail or something. But it's a serious thing. You know, you have to... So at the time, it was, you know, the Cold War was going on. The communist Chinese mainland, they were interested maybe in taking Formosa, Kim Oil, those little islands off there. So there was a lot of activity going out there.
But no jazz.
Well, they used the fact that I played a piano and I was sort of struggling, but I was starting, you know, to be fairly decent at playing a tune. I used to go and sit in with the bands in the nightclubs in Hong Kong, and they were all Filipino who played the Western-type music, you know, they were Filipino. Some of them were very good. And I used to go to this nightclub and sit in with the piano player, and then I finally got a job working in one of these places. So they used that cover for me to sort of go and watch people who was in the room, who was doing this, who was doing that. And,
oh, you were like a spy.
Well, sort of, yeah.
Meanwhile, you were probably playing Hoagie's Hong Kong
Blues. Hong Kong
Blues,
well, yeah, right. Yeah, I wish.
Cue for song, but actually I'd love to hear you play something by Duke Ellington. Or what have you got lined up?
Well, he's always been one of my favorites, and just the incredible range of music he wrote in his lifetime. I love his ballads, so I think I'll play Don't You Know I Care, which is from the 40s. Don't think that gets played very much.
It doesn't. And then, it's a good one.
I thought maybe one of his early kind of stride, raggy type pieces called The Birmingham Breakdown.
Oh, wonderful.
So we'll run them together, but there's a bit of a contrast.
Okay, great. Thank you. boy, that's great. And two tunes that I don't think we've ever had on Piano Jazz. Don't You Know I Care? That's one I somehow forget about. I'm glad you played that. But as for Birmingham Breakdown, I think a lot of people are probably not aware that Duke played that way years ago.
That's how he started playing that, what they call stride piano. Yeah, with his mentors, James P. Johnson, a wonderful pianist. And Fats Waller is absolutely marvelous. I mean, I love that music. It's so joyful.
It is, isn't it?
It's just wonderful. It makes you feel so good, and it plays the whole of the piano, you know. The piano players were an orchestra, and, you know, unto themselves in those years. They had to be. Yeah.
They had to be, yeah. Maybe playing in what was euphemistically called a spotting house. They
right.
probably had to play loud.
Or any dive. I mean,
any dive.
Right. I mean, I remember people telling me about Willie the Lion Smith. Even if there was nobody in the place, he'd still have his left hand sort of vamping away, you know, keeping some kind of rhythm going.
Well, Duke loved him, too, you
right.
know.
Right, absolutely.
What do you think about trying a hand, or our hands, rather, at a duet?
Okay.
What do you think would be good?
Well, Burton Lane died, sadly, this year, the last of the great songwriters, and I was fortunate enough to get to know him.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because I did an album with Maxine Sullivan, the great singer who sadly passed away about 4 years ago, and we devoted it all to Bert's music, you know, and he was wonderful. I mean, I went to his apartment, and he was always the eternal song player. He says, "You've got to hear the latest thing I wrote," you know. Sat down and played. It is wonderful. And I thought, well, maybe we could, if I start playing one of his things, How About You? And if you play Too Late Now, then we'll do a duet on I Hear Music. How's that?
Hey, that sounds good.
Okay.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station or stream the program online at pianojazz.npr.org. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina Public Radio.